an enormous glow. Greys were watching him, and the group of samurai that escorted him and Michael to the first checkpoint kept carefully out of his sword range. One man was hurriedly sent ahead. At the next checkpoint, the new officer bowed politely as an equal, and he bowed back. The pass was examined meticulously, but correctly. Another escort took them to the next checkpoint, where everything was repeated. Thence over the innermost moat, and the next. No one interfered with them. Hardly any samurai paid attention to him. Gradually he noticed his head was scarcely aching. His sweat had dried. He unknotted his fingers from his sword hilt and flexed them a moment. He stopped at a fountain which was set in a wall and drank and splashed water on his head. The escorting Grey stopped and waited politely, and all the time he was trying to work out why he had lost favour and the protection of Ishido and Lady Ochiba. "Nothing's changed," he thought frantically. He looked up and saw Michael staring at him. "What do you want?" "Nothing, senor," Michael said politely. Then a smile spread, and it was filled with warmth. "Ah, senor, you did me a great service back there, making that foul-mannered cabron drink his own urine. Oh, that was good to see." "Thou," he added in Latin, "I thank thee." "I did nothing for you," Blackthorn said in Portuguese, not wanting to talk Latin. "Yes, but peace be upon you, senor. Know that God moves in mysterious ways. It was a service for all men. That Ronin was shamed, and he deserved it. It is a filthy thing to abuse Bushido." "Your samurai too?" "Yes, senor, I have that honor," Michael said. "My father is cousin to Lord Kiyama, and my clan is of Hizen province in Kyushu." "How did you know he was Ronin?" Blackthorn tried to remember. "I'm not sure. Perhaps because he said he was from Kaga, and that's a long way off, and Mariko, Lady Toda, said Kaga's far north. I don't know. I don't remember really what I said." The officer of the escort came back to them. "Please excuse me, Anjin-san, but is this fellow bothering you?"
"No. No, thank you."
Blackthorn set off again. The pass was checked again, with courtesy, and they went on. The sun was lowering now, still a few hours to sunset, and dust devils whirled in tiny spirals in the heated air currents. They passed many stables, all horses facing out, lances and spears and saddles ready for instant departure, samurai grooming the horses and cleaning equipment. Blackthorn was astounded by their number.
"How many horse, Captain?" he asked.
"Thousands, Anjin-san. 10, 20, 30,000 here and elsewhere in the castle."
When they were crossing the next-to-last moat, Blackthorn beckoned Michael.
"You're guiding me to the galley?"
"Yes. That's what I was told to do, senor."
"Nowhere else?"
"No, senor."
"By whom?"
"Lord Kiyama. And the father visitor, senor."
"Ah, him." "I prefer Anjin-san, not senor, father. Please excuse me, Anjin-san, but I'm not a father. I'm not ordained." "When does that happen?"
"In God's time," Michael said confidently.
"Where's Yabu-san?"
"I don't know. So sorry."
"You're just taking me to my ship? Nowhere else?"
"Yes, Anjin-san."
"And then I'm free? Free to go where I want?"
"I was told to ask how you were, then to guide you to the ship. Nothing more. I'm just a messenger, a guide."
"Before God?"
"I'm just a guide, Anjin-san."
"Where did you learn to speak Portuguese so well? And Latin?"
"I was one of the four acolytes sent by the father visitor to Rome. I was 13, Uragano Tadasama 12.
"Ah, now I remember. Uraga-san told me you were one of them. You were his friend. You know he's dead?"
"Yes. I was sickened to hear about it."
"Christians did that?"
"Murderers did that, Anjin-san. Assassins. They will be judged. Never fear."
After a moment, Blackthorn said,
"How did you like Rome?"
"I detested it. We all did. Everything about it. The food and the filth and ugliness. They're all Etta there. Unbelievable. It took us 8 years to get there and back, and oh, how I blessed the Madonna when at last I got back.
And the church? The fathers?
Detestable. Many of them, Michael said calmly. I was shocked with their morals and mistresses and greed and pomp and hypocrisy and lack of manners. And their two standards, one for the flock and one for the shepherds. It was all hateful. And yet I found God among some of them, Anjin-san. So strange. I found the truth in the cathedrals and cloisters and among the fathers.
Michael looked at him guilelessly, a tenderness permeating him.
It was rare, Anjin-san, very rarely that I found a glimmer.
That's true.
But I did find the truth and God, and know that Christianity is the only path to life everlasting.
Please excuse me. Catholic Christianity.
Did you see the auto da fe, or Inquisition, or jails, witch trials?
I saw many terrible things. Very few men are wise. Most are sinners, and great evil happens on earth in God's name, but not of God. This world is a veil of tears, and only a preparation for everlasting peace.
He prayed silently for a moment, then, refreshed, he looked up.
Even some heretics can be good.
Maybe,
Blackthorn replied, liking him.
The last moat and last gate, the main south gate.
The last checkpoint, and his paper was taken away.
Michael walked under the last portcullis.
Blackthorn followed.
Outside the castle, 100 samurai were waiting. Kiyama's men. He saw their crucifixes and their hostility, and he stopped.
Michael did not.
The officer motioned Blackthorn onward.
He obeyed.
The samurai closed up behind him and around him, locking him in their midst. Porters and tradesmen on this main road scattered and bowed and groveled until they were passed. A few held up pathetic crosses, and Michael blessed them, leading the way down the slight slope, past the burial ground where the pit no longer smoked, across a bridge and into the city, heading for the sea. Greys and other samurai were coming up from the city among the pedestrians. When they saw Michael, they scowled and would have forced him onto the side if it hadn't been for the mass of Kiyama samurai.
Blackthorn followed Michael.
He was beyond fear, though not beyond wishing to escape. But there was no place to run or to hide. On land. His only safety was aboard Erasmus, beating out to sea, a full crew with him, provisioned and armed.
What happens at the galley, brother?
I don't know, Anjin-san.
Now they were in the city streets, nearing the sea. Michael turned a corner and came into an open fish market. Pretty maids and fat maids and old ladies and youths and men and buyers and sellers and children all gaped at him, then began bowing hastily.
Blackthorn followed the samurai through the stalls and panniers and bamboo trays of all kinds of fish, sea-sparkling fresh, laid out so cleanly, many swimming in tanks, prawns and shrimps, lobster and crabs and crayfish.
Never so clean in London, he thought absently. Neither the fish nor those who sold them.
Then he saw a row of food stalls to one side, each with a small charcoal brazier, and he caught the full perfume of broiling crayfish.
Jesus!
Without thinking, he changed direction. Immediately the samurai barred his way.
Gomenasai, Kinjiru,
one of them said.
Iye,
Blackthorn replied as roughly.
Watash tabetai des, ne? Watash Anjin-san, ne?
I'm hungry. I'm the Anjin-san. Blackthorn began to push through them. The senior officer hurried to intercept. Quickly Michael stepped back and talked placatingly, though with authority, and asked permission, and reluctantly it was granted.
Please, Anjin-san, he said. The officer says eat if you wish. What would you like?
Some of those, please.
Blackthorn pointed at the giant prawns that were headless and split down their length, all pink and white-fleshed, the shells crisped to perfection.
Some of those.
He could not tear his eyes off them.
Please tell the officer I haven't eaten for almost 2 days, and I'm suddenly famished. So sorry.
The fish seller was an old man with 3 teeth and leathery skin, and he wore only a loincloth. He was puffed with pride that his stall had been chosen, and he picked out the 5 best prawns with nimble chopsticks and laid them neatly on a bamboo tray and set others to sizzle.
Dozo, Anjin-sama.
Domo.
Blackthorn felt his stomach growling. He wanted to gorge. Instead, he picked one up with the fresh wooden chopsticks, dipped it in the sauce, and ate with relish. It was delicious.
Brother Michael?
He asked, offering the plate. Michael took one, but only for good manners. The officer refused, though he thanked him. Blackthorn finished that plate and had 2 more. He could have eaten another 2, but decided not to for good manners, and also because he didn't want to strain his stomach.
Domo,
he said, setting down the plate with a polite obligatory belch.
Beamy des!
Delicious. The man beamed and bowed, and the storekeepers nearby bowed. And then Blackthorn realized, to his horror, that he had no money. He reddened.
What is it?
Michael asked.
I haven't any money with me. Or anything to give the man. Could you lend me some, please?
I haven't any money, Anjin-san. We don't carry money. There was an embarrassed silence. The seller grinned, waiting patiently. Then, with equal embarrassment, Michael turned to the officer and quietly asked him for money. The officer was coldly furious with Blackthorn. He spoke brusquely to one of his men, who came forward and paid the storekeeper handsomely, to be thanked profusely. As pink and sweating, Michael turned and led again. Blackthorn caught up with him.
Sorry about that, but it never occurred to me. That's the first time I've bought anything here. I've never had money, as crazy as it sounds, and I never thought... I've never used money.
Please, forget it, Anjin-san. It was nothing.
Please tell the officer I'll pay him when I get to the ship.
Michael did as he was asked. They walked in silence for a while, Blackthorn getting his bearings. At the end of this street was the beach, the sea calm and dullish under the sunset light. Then he saw where they were and pointed left, to a wide street that ran east-west.
Let's go that way.
This way is quicker, Anjin-san.
Yes, but your way we've got to pass the Jesuit mission and the Portuguese Losha. I'd rather make a detour and go the long way round.
I was told to go this way.
Let's go the other way.
Blackthorn stopped. The officer asked what was the matter, and Michael explained. The officer waved them onward. Michael's way. Blackthorn weighed the results of refusing. He would be forced, or bound and carried, or dragged. None of these suited him, so he shrugged and strode on. They came out onto the wide road that skirted the beach. Half a li ahead were the Jesuit wharves and warehouses, and 100 paces farther he could see the Portuguese ship. Beyond that, another 200 paces was his galley. It was too far away to see men aboard yet. Blackthorn picked up a stone and sent it whistling out to sea.
Let's walk along the beach for a while.
Certainly, Anjin-san.
Michael went down the sand. Blackthorn walked in the shallows, enjoying the cool of the sea, the soughing of the slight surf.
It's a fine time of the day, ne?
Ah, Anjin-san, Michael said with sudden open friendliness. There are many times, Madonna forgive me, I wish I wasn't a priest, but just the son of my father. And this is one of them.
Why?
I'd like to spirit you away, you and your strange ship at Yokohama, to Hizen, to our great harbour of Sasebo.
Then I would ask you to barter with me. I'd ask you to show me, and our sea captains, the ways of your ship, and your ways of the sea. In return, I'd offer you the best teachers in the realm, teachers of Bushido, Chanoyu, Harage, Ki, Zazen, meditation, flower arranging, and all the special unique knowledges that we possess. I'd like that. Why don't we do it now?
It's not possible today, but you already know so much, and in such a short time, eh?
Mariko-sama was a great teacher,
You are a worthy samurai, and you have a quality that's rare here. Unpredictability. The Taiko had it. Toranaga-sama has it too. You see, usually we're a very predictable people.
Are you?
Yes.
Then predict a way I can escape the trap I'm in.
So sorry. There isn't one, Anjin-san, Michael said.
I don't believe that. How did you know my ship is at Yokohama?
That's common knowledge.
Is it?
Almost everything about you, and your defense of Lord Toranaga, and the Lady Maria, Lady Toda, is well known and honored.
I don't believe that either.
Blackthorn picked up another flat stone and sent it skimming over the waves. They went on, Blackthorn humming a sea shanty, liking Michael very much. Soon their way was blocked by a breakwater. They skirted it and came up onto the road once more. The Jesuit warehouse and mission were tall and brooding now under the reddening sky. He saw the orange-robed lay brothers guarding the arched stone gateway and sensed their hostility. But it did not touch him. His head began to ache again. As he had expected, Michael headed for the mission gates. He readied himself, resolved that they would have to beat him into unconsciousness before he went inside and they forced him to give up his weapons.
You're not just guiding me to my galley, eh?
Yes, Anjin-san. To his astonishment, Michael motioned him to stop outside the gateway. Nothing's changed. I was told to inform the Father Visitor as we passed. So sorry, but you'll have to wait a moment.
Thrown off guard, Blackthorn watched him enter the gates alone. He had expected that the mission was to be the end of his journey. First an inquisition and trial, with torture, then handed over to the Captain General. He looked at the Lorsha 100 paces away. Ferreira and Rodriguez were on the poop, and armed seamen crowded the main deck. Past the ship, the wharf road curled slightly, and he could just see his galley. Men were watching from the gunwales, and he thought he recognized Yabu and Vink among them, but could not be sure. There seemed to be a few women aboard also, but who they were he did not know. Surrounding the galley were greys. Many greys. His eyes returned to Ferreira and Rodriguez. Both were heavily armed. So were the seamen. Gun crews lounged near the two small shoreside cannon, but in reality they were manning them. He recognized the great bulk of Pissarro, the boatswain, moving down the companionway with a group of men. His eyes followed them, then his blood chilled. A tall stake was driven into the packed earth on the far side wharf. Wood was piled around the base.
Ah, Captain Pilot! How are you?
Delacour was coming through the gates, dwarfing Michael beside him. Today the Father Visitor was wearing a Jesuit robe, his great height and luxuriant grey-white beard giving him the ominous regality of a biblical patriarch.
Every inch an inquisitor, outwardly benign, Blackthorn thought.
He stared up into the brown eyes, finding it strange to look up at any man, and even stranger to see compassion in the eyes. But he knew there would be no pity behind the eyes, and he expected none.
Ah, Father Visitor, how are you?
He replied, the prawns now leaden in his stomach, sickening him.
Shall we go on?
Why not?
So the Inquisition's to be aboard, Blackthorn thought, desperately afraid, wishing he had pistols in his belt.
You'd be the first to die, Eminence.
You stay here, Michael,
Delacroix said. Then he glanced toward the Portuguese frigate. His face hardened, and he set off. Blackthorn hesitated. Michael and the surrounding samurai were watching him oddly.
Sayonara, Anjin-san, Michael said. Go with God.
Blackthorn nodded briefly and started to walk through the samurai, waiting for them to fall on him to take away his swords. But they let him through unmolested. He stopped and looked back, his heart racing. For a moment, he was tempted to draw his sword and charge, but there was no escape that way. They wouldn't fight him. Many had spears, so they would catch him and disarm him, and bind him and hand him on.
I won't go bound, he promised himself.
His only path was forward, and there his swords were helpless against guns. He would charge the guns, but they would just maim him in the knees and bind him.
Captain Blackthorn, come along,
Delacroix called out.
Yes, just a moment, please.
Blackthorn beckoned Michael.
Listen, brother. Down by the beach, you said I was a worthy samurai. Did you mean it?
Yes, Engine-san. That and everything.
Then I beg a favor, as a samurai,
he said quietly but urgently.
What favor?
To die as a samurai.
Your death isn't in my hands. It's in the hand of God, Engine-san.
Yes, but I ask that favor of you.
Blackthorn waved at the distant stake.
That's no way. That's filthy.
Perplexed, Michael peered toward the Lorsha. Then he saw the stake for the first time.
Blessed Mother of God!
Captain Blackthorn, please come along,
Delacroix called again. Blackthorn said more urgently,
Explain to the officer. He's got enough samurai here to insist, nay. Explain to him. You've been to Europe. You know how it is there. It's not much to ask, nay? Please, I'm samurai. One of them could be my second.
I will ask.
Michael went back to the officer and began to talk softly and urgently. Blackthorn turned and centered his attention on the ship. He walked forward. Delacroix waited till he was alongside and set off again. Ahead, Blackthorn saw Ferreira strut off the poop, down along the main deck, pistols in his belt, rapier at his side. Rodriguez was watching him, right hand on the butt of a long-barreled dueling piece. Pizarro and 10 seamen were already on the jetty, leaning on bayoneted muskets. And the long shadow of the stake reached out toward him.
Oh, God! For a brace of pistols, and 10 jolly jacktars, and 1 cannon!
He thought, as the gap closed inexorably.
Oh, God! Let me not be shamed. Good evening, Eminence,
Ferreira said, his eyes seeing only Blackthorn.
So, in...
Good evening, Captain General.
Delacroix pointed angrily at the stake.
Is this your idea?
Yes, Eminence.
Go back aboard your ship.
This is a military decision.
Go back aboard your ship.
No. Pizarro!
But once the boatswain and the bayoneted shore party came on guard and advanced toward Blackthorn, Ferreira slid out the pistol.
So, Inglés, we meet again. That's something that pleases me not at all.
Blackthorn's sword came out of its scabbard. He held it awkwardly with 2 hands, the broken haft hurting him.
Tonight you will be pleased in hell,
Ferreira said thickly.
If you had any courage, you'd fight, man to man. But you're not a man. You're a coward, a Spanish coward without balls. Disarm him,
Ferreira ordered. At once the 10 men went forward, bayonets leveled. Blackthorn backed away, but he was surrounded. Bayonets stabbed for his legs, and he slashed at an assailant, but as the man retreated, another attacked from behind. Then Delacroix came to his senses and shouted,
Put down your guns! Before God, I order you to stop!
The seamen were flustered. All muskets were zeroed in on Blackthorn, who stood helplessly at bay, sword high.
Get back, all of you!
Delacroix called out.
Get back! Before God, get back! Are you animals?
Ferreira said,
I want that man.
I know, and I've already told you, you can't have him. Yesterday and today, are you deaf? God give me patience. Order your men aboard.
I order you to turn around and go away.
You order me?
Yes, I order you. I'm Captain General, Governor of Macau, Chief Officer of Portugal in Asia. And that man's a threat to the state, the church, the black ship, and Macau.
Before God, I will excommunicate you and all your crew if this man's harmed. You hear?
Delacroix spun on the musketeers, who backed off, frightened. Except Pizarro. Pizarro stood his ground defiantly, his pistol loose in his hand, waiting for Ferreira's order.
Get on that ship and out of the way.
You're making a mistake, Ferreira stormed. He's a threat. I'm military commander in Asia, and I say, this is a church matter, not a military
Blackthorn was dazed, hardly able to think or to see, his head once more exploding with pain. Everything had happened so fast, one moment guarded, the next not. One moment betrayed to the Inquisition, the next escaped, then to be betrayed again, and now defended by the Chief Inquisitor. Nothing made sense. Ferreira was shouting,
I caution you again. As God's my judge, you're making a mistake, and I'll inform Lisbon.
Meanwhile, order your men aboard, or I'll remove you as Captain General of the Black Ship.
You don't have that power.
Unless you order your men aboard and order the Inglés unharmed at once, I declare you excommunicated, and any man who serves under you, in any command, excommunicated, and curse you and all who serve you, in the name of God.
By the Madonna.
Ferreira stopped. He was not afraid for himself, but now his black ship was jeopardized, and he knew most of his crew would desert him unless he obeyed. For a moment, he contemplated shooting the priest, but that would not take away the curse. So he conceded.
Very well. Back aboard, everyone. Stand down!
Obediently, the men scattered, glad to be away from the priest's wrath. Blackthorn was still bewildered, half wondering if his head was tricking him. Then, in the melee, Pizarro's hatred burst. He aimed. Delacqua saw the covert movement and leaped forward to protect Blackthorn with his own bulk. Pizarro pulled the trigger, but at that moment arrows impaled him. The pistol fired harmlessly, and he collapsed, screaming. Blackthorn spun around and saw six Kiyama archers, fresh arrows already in their bows. Standing near them was Michael. The officer spoke harshly. Pizarro gave a last shriek, his limbs contorted, and he died. Michael trembled as he broke the silence.
The officer says, so sorry, but he was afraid for the father visitor's life.
Michael was begging God to forgive him for giving the signal to fire.
But Pizarro had been warned, he reasoned, and it is my duty to see the father visitor's orders are obeyed, that his life is protected, that assassins are stamped out, and no one excommunicated.
Delacqua was on his knees beside the corpse of Pizarro. He made the sign of the cross and said the sacred words. The Portuguese around him were watching the samurai, craving the order to kill the murderers. The rest of Kiyama's men were hastening from the mission gate, where they had remained, and a number of greys were streaming back from the galley area to investigate. Through his almost blinding rage, Ferreira knew he could not afford a fight, here and now.
Everyone back aboard! Bring Pizarro's body.
Suddenly the shore party began to obey. Blackthorn lowered his sword, but did not sheathe it. He waited stupefied, expecting a trick, expecting to be captured and dragged aboard. On the quarterdeck, Rodriguez said quietly,
Stand by to repel boarders, but carefully, by God.
Instantly men slipped to action stations.
Cover the Captain General. Prepare the longboat.
Delacroix got up and turned on Ferreira, who stood arrogantly at the companionway, prepared to defend his ship.
You're responsible for that man's death,
the father visitor hissed.
Your fanatic, vengeful lust, and unho—
Before you say something publicly, you may regret, Eminence. You'd better think carefully,
Ferreira interrupted.
I bow to your order. Even though I know, before God, you were making a terrible mistake. You heard me order my men back. Pizarro disobeyed you, not me. And the truth is, you're responsible, if anyone is. You prevented him and us from doing our duty. That Inglés is the enemy. It was a military decision by God. I'll inform Lisbon.
His eyes checked the battle readiness of his ship and the approaching samurai. Rodriguez had moved to the main deck gangway.
Captain General, I can't get out to sea with this wind and this tide.
Get a longboat ready to haul us out if need be.
It's being done.
Ferreira shouted at the seamen carrying Pizarro, telling them to hurry. Quickly, all were back aboard. The cannon were manned, though discreetly, and everyone had two muskets nearby. Left and right, samurai were massing on the wharf, but they made no overt move to interfere. Still on the dock, Ferreira said peremptorily to Michael,
"Tell them all to disperse. There's no trouble here. Nothing for them to do. There was a mistake, a bad one, but they were right to shoot the bosun. Tell them to disperse."
He hated to say it, and wanted to kill them all, but he could almost smell the peril on the wharf, and he had no option now but to retreat. Michael did as he was ordered. The officers did not move.
"You'd better go on, Eminence," Ferreira said bitterly. "But this is not the last of it. You'll regret saving him."
The Lacqua, too, felt the explosiveness surrounding them. But it did not touch him. He made the sign of the cross and said a small benediction. Then he turned away.
"Come along, pilot."
"Why are you letting me go?"
Blackthorn asked, the pain in his head agonizing, still not daring to believe it.
"Come along, pilot."
"But why are you letting me go? I don't understand."
"Nor do I,"
Ferreira said.
"I'd like to know the real reason too, Eminence. Isn't he still a threat to us and the church?"
Delacroix stared at him.
"Yes,"
he wanted to say, to wipe the arrogance off the popinjay's face in front of him.
"But the bigger threat is the immediate war, and how to buy time for you and 50 years of black ships. And whom to choose? Torunaga or Ishido? You understand nothing of our problems, Ferreira, or the stakes involved, or the delicacy of our position here, or the dangers. Please, Lord Kiyama, reconsider. I suggest you should choose Lord Torunaga,"
he had told the daimyo yesterday, through Michael as interpreter, not trusting his own Japanese, which was only fair.
"This is unwarranted interference in Japanese affairs and outside your jurisdiction. And too, the barbarian must die."
Delacroix had used all his diplomatic skill, but Kiyama had been adamant and had refused to commit himself or change his position. Then, this morning, when he had gone to Kiyama to tell him that through God's will, the Inglés was neutralized, there had been a glimmer of hope.
"I've considered what you said,"
Kiyama had told him.
"I will not ally myself with Torunaga. Between now and the battle, I will watch both contenders very carefully. At the correct time, I will choose. And now I consent to let the barbarian go. Not because of what you've told me, but because of the Lady Mariko, to honor her. And because the Anjin-san is samurai."
Ferreira was still staring back at him.
"Isn't the Inglés still a threat?"
"Have a safe journey, Captain General, and Godspeed. Pilot, I'm taking you to your galley. Are you all right?"
"It's... my head, it's... I think the explosion. You're really letting me go? Why?"
"Because the Lady Maria, the Lady Mariko, asked us to protect you."
Delacroix started off again.
"But that's no reason. You wouldn't do that just because she asked you."
"I agree,"
Ferreira said. Then he called out,
"Eminence, why not tell him the whole truth?"
Delacroix did not stop. Blackthorn began to follow, but he did not turn his back to the ship, still expecting treachery.
"Doesn't make sense. You know I'm going to destroy you. I'll take your black ship."
Ferreira laughed scornfully.
"With what, Inglés? You have no ship."
"What do you mean?"
"You have no ship. She's dead. If she wasn't, I'd never let you go, whatever His Eminence threatened."
"It's not true."
Through the fog in his head, Blackthorn heard Ferreira say it again, and laughed louder, and add something about an accident, and the hand of God,
and your ship's burned to her spine, so you'll never harm my ship now, though you're still heretic and enemy, and still a threat to the faith.
Then he saw Rodriguez clearly, pity on his face, and the lips spelled out,
Yes, it's true, Inglés.
It's not true. Can't be true.
Then the Inquisitor priest was saying from a million leagues away,
I received a message this morning from Father Alvito. It seems an earthquake caused a tidal wave. The wave...
But Blackthorn was not listening. His mind was crying out.
Your ship's dead. You've let her down. Your ship's dead. You've no ship. No ship. No ship! It's not true. You're lying. My ship's in a safe harbor and guarded by 4,000 men. She's safe.
Someone said,
But not from God.
And then the Inquisitor was talking again.
The tidal wave healed your ship. They say that oil lamps on deck were upset and the fire spread. Your ship's gutted.
Lies. What about the deck watch? There's always a deck watch. It's impossible,
he shouted. But he knew that somehow the price for his life had been his ship.
You're beached, Inglés.
Ferreira was goading him.
You're marooned. You're here forever. You'll never get passage on one of our ships. You're beached forever.
It went on, and he was drowning. Then his eyes cleared. He heard the cry of the gulls and smelled the stink of the shore. And he saw Ferreira. He saw his enemy, and knew it was all a lie to drive him mad. He knew it absolutely, and that the priests were part of the plot.
God take you to hell,
he shouted, and rushed at Ferreira, his sword raised high. But only in his dream was it a rush. Hans caught him easily and took his swords away, and set him walking between two greys, through all the others, until he was at the companionway of the galley, and they gave him back his swords, and let him go. It was difficult for him to see or to hear, his brain hardly working now in the pain, but he was certain it was all a trick, to drive him mad, and that it would succeed if he did not make a great effort.
Help me, he prayed. Someone help me.
Then Yabu was beside him, and Vink and his vassals, and he could not distinguish the languages. They guided him aboard, Kiri there somewhere, and Suzuko, a child crying in a maid's arms, the remnants of the Brown's garrison crowding the deck, rowers and seamen. Smell of sweat, fear sweat. Yabu was talking at him, and Vink. It took a long time to concentrate.
Pilot, why in Christ's name did they let you go?
He could not say the words. Then somehow he found himself on the quarterdeck, and Yabu was ordering the captain's sand to put to sea before Ishido changed his mind about letting them all leave, and before the greys on the dock changed their minds about permitting the galley to go, telling the captain, full speed for Nagasaki. Kiri saying,
So sorry, Yabu-sama. Please, first Edo. We must go to Edo.
The oars of the shallow draft vessel eased off the wharf, against the tide and against the wind, and went out into the stream, gulls crying in the wake, and Blackthorn pulled himself out of his daze enough to say coherently,
No, so sorry. Go Yokohama. Must Yokohama. First, get men at Nagasaki, Anjin-san. Understand? Important. First men. Have plan,
Yabu said.
No. Go Yokohama. My ship. My ship, danger. What danger?
Yabu demanded.
Christians say fire. What? For the love of Christ, pilot, what's amiss?
Vink cried out. Blackthorn pointed shakily toward the Lorsha.
They told me Erasmus is lost, Johan. Our ship's lost. Fired.
Then he burst out.
Oh, God, let it all be a lie.
Part 6 Chapter 60 He stood in the shallows and looked out at the charred skeleton of his ship, aground and heeled over. Awash in the small surf, 70 yards seaward, masts gone, decks gone, everything gone, except for the keel and the ribs of her chest that jutted to the sky.
The monkeys tried to beach her,
Fink said sullenly.
No, the tide took her there.
For Christ's sweet sake, why say that, pilot? If you've a God-cursed fire and you're near the God-cursed shore, you beach her to fight it there. Jesus, even these piss-ass bastards know that.
Fink spat on the sand.
Monkeys! You should never have left her to them! What are we going to do now? How are we going to get home? You should have left her at Edo safe, and us safe, with our etters.
The whine in Vink's voice irritated Blackthorn. Everything about Vink irritated him now. Three times in the last week, he had almost told his vassals to knife Vink quietly and throw him overboard, to put him out of his misery when the weeping and bewailing and accusations had become too much. But he had always curbed his temper and gone aloft or below to seek out Yabu. Near Yabu, Vink made no sound, petrified of him, and rightly. Aboard it had been easy to contain himself. Here, shamed before his ship's nakedness, it was not easy.
Perhaps they beached her, Johan, he said, weary unto death.
You bet the muck-eating bastards beached her! But they didn't put out the fire. God curse them all to hell. Should never have let Japos on her, stinking piss-assed monkeys.
Blackthorn shut his ears and concentrated on the galley. She was moored downwind to the wharf, a few hundred paces away, by Yokohama village. The lean-tos of the musket regiment were still scattered about the foreshore and foothills, men drilling, hurrying, a pall of anxiety over all of them. It was a warm, sunny day with a fair wind blowing. His nose caught a scent of mimosa perfume. He could see Kiri and Lady Suzuko in conversation under orange sunshades on the forepoop, and he wondered if the perfume came from them. Then he watched Yabu and Naga walking up and down the wharf, Naga talking and Yabu listening, both very tense. Then he saw them look across at him. He sensed their restlessness. When the galley had rounded the point 2 hours ago, Yabu had said,
"Why go look closer, Anjin-san? Ship dead, ne? All finished. Go Edo. Get ready for war. No time now."
"So sorry. Stop here. Must look close. Please.
Go Edo. Ship dead. Finished. Ne?
You want, you go. I swim."
"Wait. Ship dead, ne?
So sorry, please stop. Little time. Then Edo."
At length Yabu had agreed, and their doctor Naga had met them.
"So sorry, Anjin-san. Ne?"
Naga had said, his eyes bleary from sleeplessness.
"Yes, so sorry. Please, what happened?" "So sorry. Don't know. Not Honto. I was not here, understand? I was ordered Mishima, few days. When come back... Men say earthquake at night. All happen at night, understand? You understand earthquake, Anjin-san?"
"Understand, yes. Please continue."
"So little earthquake, at night. Some men say tidal wave arrive. Some say not tidal wave, but just one big wave, storm wave. There was a storm that night, ne? Little typhoon. You understand typhoon?"
"Yes."
"Ah, so sorry. Very dark night. They say big wave come. They say oil lamps on deck break. Ship catch fire, ne? Everything fire. Quick. Very. But guards, Naga-san. Where deck men? Very dark. Fire very quick, understand? So sorry. Shigata ganai, ne?"
he added hopefully.
"Where deck men, Naga-san? I leave guard, ne?
When I returned one day later... Very sorry, ne? Ship finished. Still burning there in shallows, near shore. Ship finished. I get all men from ship and all shore patrol of that night. I ask them to report. No one is sure what happened."
Naga's face darkened.
"I order them to salvage. To bring everything possible. Understand? Everything. All up there now in camp."
He pointed to the plateau.
"Under guard. My guards. Then I put them to death and rush back to Mishima to report to Lord Toranaga."
"All of them?"
All to death? Yes, they failed in their duty. What's Lord Toranaga say? Very angry. Very right to be angry, ne? I offer seppuku. Lord Toranaga refused permission. Lord Toranaga very angry, Anjin-san.
Naga waved a nervous hand around the foreshore.
Whole regiment in disgrace, Anjin-san. Everyone. All chief officers here in disgrace, Anjin-san. Sent to Mishima. 58 seppuku already.
Blackthorn had thought about that number, and he wanted to shriek, 5,000 or 50,000 can't repay the loss of my ship.
Bad, his mouth was saying. Yes, very bad. Yes, better go Edo. Today. War today, tomorrow, next day. Sorry.
Then Naga had spoken intently with Yabu for a few moments, and Blackthorn, dull-witted, hating the foul-sounding words, hating Naga and Yabu and all of them, could barely follow him, though he saw Yabu's unease increase. Naga turned again to him with an embarrassed finality.
So sorry, Anjin-san. Nothing more I could do. Honto, ne?
Blackthorn had forced himself to nod.
Honto. Domo, Naga-san. Shigata ganai.
He had made some excuse and left them to walk down to his ship, to be alone, no longer trusting himself to contain his insane rage, knowing that there was nothing he could do, that he would never know any more of the truth. That whatever the truth, he had lost his ship, that the priests had somehow managed to pay men, or cajole men, or threaten them into this filthy desecration. He had fled from Yabu and Naga, walking slowly and erect, but before he could escape the wharf, Vink had rushed after him and begged not to be left behind. Seeing the man's abject, cringing fear, he had agreed and allowed him to follow. But he had closed his mind to him. Then, suddenly, down by the shore, they had come on the grisly remains of the heads. More than 100, hidden from the wharf by dunes and stuck on spears. Seabirds rose up in a white shrieking cloud as they approached, and settled back to continue ravaging and quarrelling once they had hurried past. Now he was studying the hulk of his ship, one thought obsessing him.
Mariko had seen the truth, and had whispered the truth to Kiyama or to the priests.
Without his ship, the Anjin-san's helpless against the church. I ask you to leave him alive. Just kill the ship.
He could hear her saying it. She was right. It was such a simple solution to the Catholics' problem. Yes, but any one of them could have thought of the same thing. And how did they breach the 4,000 men? Whom did they bribe? How? It doesn't matter who, or how. They've won. God help me. Without my ship, I'm dead. I can't help Toranaga, and his war will swallow us up. Poor ship, he said. Forgive me. So sad to die so uselessly. After all those leagues.
Eh?
Vink said.
Nothing, he said. Poor ship, forgive me. It was never my bargain with her or anyone. Poor Mariko. Forgive her, too.
What did you say, pilot?
Nothing. I was just thinking out loud.
You said something. I heard you say something, for Christ's sake.
For Christ's sake, shut up.
Eh? Shut up, is it? We're marooned with these piss-eaters for the rest of our lives, eh?
Yes.
We're to grovel to these God-cursed heathen shitheads for the rest of our muck-eating lives. And how long will that be, when all they talk about's war, war, war? Eh?
Yes.
Yes, is it?
Vink's whole body was trembling, and Blackthorn readied.
It's your fault. You said to come to the Japans, and we come, and how many died coming here? You're to blame.
Yes. Sorry, but you're right.
Sorry, are you, pilot? How are we going to get home? That's your God-cursed job, to get us home. How are you going to do that, eh?
I don't know. Another of our ships will get here, Johan. We've just got to wait another...
Wait? How long are we to wait? 5 muck-plagued years? 20? Christ Jesus, you said yourself all these shitheads are at war now.
Fink's mind snapped.
They're going to chop off our heads and stick them like those there, and the birds will eat us.
A paroxysm of insane laughter shook him, and he reached into his ragged shirt. Blackthorn saw the pistol butt, and it would have been easy to smash Fink to the ground and take the pistol, but he did nothing to defend himself. Fink waved the pistol in his face, dancing around him with drooling lunatic glee. Blackthorn waited unafraid, hoping for the bullet. Then Fink took to his heels down the beach, the seabird scudding into the air, mewing and cawing out of his path. Fink ran for a frantic 100 paces or more, then collapsed, ending up on his back, his legs still moving, arms waving, mouthing obscenities. After a moment he turned on his belly with a last shriek, facing Blackthorn, and froze. There was a silence. When Blackthorn came up to Fink, the pistol was leveled at him, the eyes staring with demented antagonism, the lips pulled back from his teeth. Fink was dead. Blackthorn closed the eyes and picked him up and slung him over his shoulder and walked back. Samurai were running toward him, Naga and Yabu at their head.
What happened, Anjin-san?
He went mad.
Is that so? Is he dead?
Yes. First burial, then Edo.
All right?
Aye.
Blackthorn sent for a shovel and asked them to leave him for a while, and he buried Vink above the waterline on a crest that overlooked the wreck. He set a service over the grave and planted a cross in the grave that he fashioned out of 2 pieces of driftwood. It was so easy to say the service. He had spoken it too many times. On this voyage alone, over 100 times for his own crew since they'd left Holland. Only Bacchus van Neck and the boy Croak survived now. The others had come from other ships. Salomon the Mute, Jan Roper, Sonk the Cook, Hinsel the Sailmaker.
5 ships and 496 men. And now Vink. All gone now except the 7 of us.
And for what?
To circumnavigate the globe? To be the first?
I don't know,
he said to the grave.
But that won't happen now.
He made everything tidy.
Sayonara, Johan.
Then he walked down to the sea and swam naked to the wreck to purify himself. He had told Naga and Yabu that this was their custom after burying one of their men on land. The captain had to do it in private, if there was no one else, and the sea was the purifier before their god, which was the Christian god, but not quite the same as the Jesuit Christian god. He hung on to one of the ship's ribs and saw that barnacles were already clustering, sand already silting over the keel plate, 3 fathoms below. Soon the sea would claim her, and she would vanish. He looked around aimlessly.
Nothing to salvage, he told himself, expecting nothing.
He swam ashore. Some of his vassals waited with fresh clothes. He dressed and put his swords in his sash and walked back. Near the wharf, one of the vassals pointed.
Anjin-san!
A carrier pigeon, pursued by a hawk, was clattering wildly for the safety of the home coop in the village. The coop was in the attic of the tallest building, set back from the seashore on a slight rise. With 100 yards to go, the hawk on station, high above its prey, closed its wings and plummeted. The stoop hit with a burst of feathers, but it was not perfect. The pigeon fell screeching as though mortally wounded, then, near the ground, recovered and fled for home. She scrambled through a hole in the coop to safety.
The hawk, egg-egg-egging,
with rage a few paces behind, and everyone cheered, except Blackthorn. Even the pigeon's cleverness and bravery did not touch him. Nothing touched anymore.
Good, ne?
One of his vessels said, embarrassed by his master's dourness.
Yes.
Blackthorn went back to the galley. Yabu was there, and the Lady Suzuko, Kiri, and the captain. Everything was ready.
Yabu-san, ima edo ka?
He asked. But Yabu did not answer, and no one noticed him. All eyes were on Naga, who was hurrying toward the village. A pigeon handler came out of the building to meet him. Naga broke the seal and read the slip of paper.
Galley and all aboard to stay at Yokohama until I arrive.
It was signed Torunaga. The horsemen came rapidly over the lip of the hill in the early sun. First were the 50 outriders and scouts of the advance guard led by Buntaro. Next came the banners. Then Toranaga. After him was the bulk of the war party under the command of Omi. Following them were Father Alvito Tsuko-san and 10 acolytes in a tight group, and after them a small rearguard, among them hunters with falcons on their gloves, all hooded except one great yellow-eyed goshawk. All samurai were heavily armed and wore chain cuirasses and cavalry battle armor. Toranaga rode easily, his spirit lightened now, a newer and stronger man, and he was glad to be near the end of his journey. It was 2.5 days since he had sent the order to Naga to keep the galley at Yokohama, and had left Mishima on this forced march. They had come very fast, picking up fresh horses every 20 li or so. At one station, where horses were not available, the samurai in charge was removed, his stipend given to another, and he was invited to commit seppuku, or shave his head and become a priest. The samurai chose death.
The fool had been warned, Toranaga thought. The whole Kanto's mobilized and on a war footing. Still, that man wasn't a total waste, he told himself. At least the news of that example will flash the length of my domains, and there'll be no more unnecessary delays. So much yet to do, he thought,
his mind frantic with facts and plans and counterplans.
In 4 days it will be the day, the 22nd day of the 8th month, the month for viewing the moon. Today, at Osaka, the courtier Ogaki Takamoto formally goes to Ishido and regretfully announces that the Son of Heaven's visit to Osaka has to be delayed for a few days due to ill health.
It had been so easy to manipulate the delay. Although Ogaki was a prince of the 7th rank and descended from the Emperor Go-Shoko, the 95th of the dynasty, he was impoverished like all members of the imperial court. The court possessed no revenue of its own. Only samurai possessed revenue, and for hundreds of years the court had had to exist on a stipend, always carefully controlled and lean, granted it by the shogun, kampaku, or ruling junta of the day. So Toranaga had humbly and very cautiously assigned 10,000 koku yearly to Ogaki, through intermediaries, to donate to needy relatives as Ogaki himself wished, saying with due humility that being Minowara and therefore also descended from Go-Shoko, he was delighted to be of service and trusted that the Exalted would take care of his precious health in so treacherous a climate as Osaka's, particularly around the 22nd day. Of course, there was no guarantee that Ogaki could persuade or dissuade the Exalted. But Toranaga had surmised that the advisers to the Son of Heaven, or the Son of Heaven himself, would welcome an excuse to delay. Hopefully, at length to cancel. Only once in 3 centuries had a ruling emperor ever left his sanctuary at Kyoto. That had been 4 years ago at the invitation of the Taiko to view the cherry blossoms near Osaka Castle, coincident with his resigning the Kampaku title in favor of Yeimon, and so, by implication, putting the imperial seal on the succession. Normally, no daimyo, not even Toranaga, would have dared to make such an offer to any member of the court, because it insulted and usurped the prerogative of a superior, in this case the council, and would instantly be construed as treason, as it rightly was. But Toranaga knew he was already indicted for treason.
Tomorrow, Ishido and his allies will move against me. How much more time have I left? Where should the battle be? Odawara? Victory depends only on the time and the place, and not on the number of men. They'll outnumber me 3-1 at the very least. Never mind, he thought. Ishido's coming out of Osaka Castle. Mariko pried him out. In the chess game for power, I sacrificed my queen, but Ishido's lost 2 castles.
Yes.
But you lost more than a queen in the last play. You lost a ship. A pawn can become a queen, but not a ship.
They were riding downhill in a quick, bone-jarring trot. Below was the sea. They turned a corner on the path, and there was Yokohama Village, with the wreck just offshore. He could see the plateau where the musket regiment were drawn up in battle review with their horses and equipment, muskets in their holsters, other samurai equally well armed, lining his route as an honor guard nearer the shore. On the outskirts of the village, the villagers were near